Hi, this is Chris from PleasureMechanics.com. Welcome to Speaking of Sex. Come over to PleasureMechanics.com for the entire podcast archive, and go to PleasureMechanics.com/free to sign up for one of our free mini courses so we can send our best advice straight to your inbox. You know we love hearing from you. Sometimes I write a quick email back, some questions get turned into a podcast episode. But a few months ago, I got an email from today's guest, and I realized that not only did we need to tackle this topic, but I wanted him to share his story and advice with the rest of the listening community. So I asked him if he would record a conversation, and he graciously agreed. Ramsey, welcome to Speaking of Sex.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
I am going to start by reading an excerpt from your first email, and then we will dive in.
Okay.
So you wrote to me, I have outed myself to friends and relatives on Facebook, on standard dating sites, and in conversations because I feel it is important to educate and combat the ignorance on this topic. But it is a subject that makes people squirm. Some people approach me quietly to tell me they appreciated my candor and my information, while others encourage me not to broadcast so loudly about something so personal, to in a sense stuff myself back in the closet. So, Ramsey, just between us and our thousands of listeners, will you introduce yourself and tell us what you need to come out of the closet about?
Absolutely. My name is Ramsey, and I have genital herpes.
So, I thought it was really interesting that you used the metaphor of coming out. And I think it's safe to say, upon reflection, that in a lot of sex-positive circles, there's now more stigma about sexually transmitted infections than there is about being gay. What are some of the ways you've experienced this?
I have experienced it in my dating life, and as well as in out and about socially as well. You hear jokes, you hear a lot of jokes in multiple different contexts. And yes, it does seem to be okay to talk about a lot of other things that we may not have talked about 10, 20 years ago, but this one, the stigma for this, to me, from my experience, has really continued and remains and is part of everyday society.
And one of the things you really challenged us on is that a lot of sex-positive media will talk about preventing sexually transmitted infections, but there isn't a whole lot of information about living with an infection once it happens. And yet we know that a huge population, a huge percentage of sexually active adults will have an infection, whether that's a permanent one or a temporary one. And there isn't a lot of dialogue about it, which is one of the reasons I really wanted you to help tell us this story. So take us back. What was it like for you when you first learned that you had herpes?
I actually got involved with someone, and consciously and knowingly, who had herpes and had genital herpes, had outbreaks. And I chose to, I was in a long-term relationship with that person, and I chose to have sex with this person unprotected. And when we ended our relationship years later, I thought it was a good idea to go and get tested. And what I found very quickly was, when I went to get tested, that the medical community, including organizations like Planned Parenthood and others, didn't want to test me if I had not had an outbreak. And it's important to note that I, at that point, had never had and have never had an outbreak, at least one that I'm aware of. And the medical community did not want me to get tested. They really didn't. They discouraged me in every way, shape, and form. And I was kind of stubborn. I wanted to know.
Wow.
I did take the test, and I got a phone call that said I was positive, and I wouldn't say I was stunned, but I have to say that a lot of things about my life changed at that moment.
So you had a known exposure, but was this your first sexual partner?
It was not. I was divorced and had multiple partners before this, and as much as I was made aware of herpes by being in this relationship with this partner, I don't in actuality know when I contracted it and it was passed on. And part of the issue is that in herpes testing is not part of standard STI screenings. Without any outbreak, So I think that's a really big misconception. And I think it gives people kind of a false sense of security.
So even if you go for kind of your regular checkup and you get the testing and people are like, oh, I've got tested, probably herpes wasn't included in that.
It is almost never included in that. Uh-huh. And I think there is a false sense of security there. And I heard so many times, well, I get regular STI screenings and they've never said I have it, when in actuality, they're not actually getting tested for it. And that, I think, is a huge misconception. So there's a lot of unknowns and a lot of unknowables, and that can be really frustrating at times.
And it's not necessarily your most recent sexual partner that gave it to you.
Absolutely not. Right. And that's really common in the stories that are out there. There's just so little testing done that it's really an unknown. It's really unknowable.
Yeah. I've even heard couples have breakup stories because one of the partners had an outbreak all of a sudden and they thought they were monogamous. And really it was just like a life event created stress that then brought up the virus that had been laying dormant for years. So breakups happen because of this misconception.
Oh, all the time. And it really does lend itself to, again, that negative image of those who have it as somehow slept around, or and there's just so much blame and frustration and fear, and that is really part of the mythology and the negatives about this particular virus.
Right. It's not like a cold and you sneeze and you know the person you got a cold from.
Yeah, well, I don't even know if you can know that, but yes, you really don't know necessarily. I mean, sometimes you can trace it and sometimes you really can't.
Yeah. And with our toddler, it's always like, as soon as she gets a cold, my partner's like, it was that child at the playgroup. I'm like, it could have been the doorknob, you know?
Exactly the same thing. And yes.
Where do you think that tendency to like want to point fingers comes from?
Oh, wow. Human psychology. I just think it's easier if we have someone else to blame. And again, it comes back to personal responsibility, right? Yeah. And I mean, no one wants to take responsibility for, their own decisions. And when it comes to sexuality and sex, and it's a very difficult thing to kind of take responsibility for things when they go wrong and to want to blame. Mm-hmm. And that's sad. But it's one of the huge mythologies when it comes to herpes, is you know who it is and when it happened. And with so little testing done, we just don't have those answers.
That's right.
And it was really instructive for me when I went, and this was really truly a lesson, was when I myself went back to this person later after we had broken up and said, hey, just so you know, I got tested and, you know, I got herpes from you. That was, you know, what I said. And her response was, how do you know it was me? And that was the first time I actually went back and checked my own test records of my own testing and realized I hadn't been tested for years and years since my divorce. And she was right. There's a high probability perhaps there at best, but it's not very useful and not very instructive, I don't think. It's just good to know that it's a good lesson. Yes. hard one. But she was right.
All right. I want to circle back to this, but I also find it fascinating that now you've kind of been on both sides of the dating coin. So what was it like when she told you she was positive? Like, at what stage in the relationship did that happen? And did you have a moment where you wanted to run, or what was your experience there?
That wasn't my reaction. I didn't know a lot about it, and the conversation took place very early in the relationship. She told me really before we had any sort of sexual contact, and she had had a previous person in her life that had been a very big issue for. For me, I guess I didn't know what to think. I knew I really was into this person, and but I was fairly naive as to, or and really ignorant of facts. I didn't have much to go on, I guess. Like most people, I didn't really, but I wasn't scared off, and it didn't take long for me to decide that this was the right thing, and this was the right person. So
yeah, I get that. And what's interesting about herpes is that it's not an infection you can prevent using condoms, and it's a skin-to-skin thing, right? So safe sex with when you're dealing with herpes is kind of an interesting thing to tackle. You can try to prevent it, not have contact while there are outbreaks, but it's really an easy virus to transmit, right?
Yes, there's no safe sex. There's safer sex where herpes is concerned. And that's certainly one of the things I was aware of in this particular case. We did use condoms for a while, but, you know, after a while, I really decided that, made the decision that that was by no means a guarantee. So yeah. We quit using them.
Yeah, I have so been there. And so what was your process like as you started to date again? And how did you decide when to disclose? And what were kind of the range of reactions you got?
My disclosure, my method of disclosure and time of everything else varied as well, just as the reactions varied. But in general, maybe part of partly my personality, but just partly knowing this issue about transmittal and condoms being only so effective to that, I usually had the conversation fairly quickly. And the other thing I chose to do after a while was to actually put it sort of front and center in my dating profile on the mainstream sites. Mm. And that was always an interesting sort of dilemma or struggle, I guess. But I was generally very upfront for the most part about that. So, those conversations took place fairly early on, and
Was there the sense of just kind of get it out of the way rather than invest in a partner who then might have a negative reaction?
Yeah, very much. I mean, I think, you know, I got both pieces of advice, and one of them was, you know, why would you do this so early on when you don't even know if you're into this person, or you don't know what the future holds for you, even just, you know, days later. And it's interesting. I guess for me, it was, I really didn't want to invest a lot of emotional energy and then have to have the conversation. And these days, the conversation to me in my own mind has to come up fairly quickly, because generally speaking, sex becomes an issue very quickly, in the sense that there's oral, there's, you know, genital contact, and all of which herpes is an issue. Yeah. So for me, it made more sense to come up, be very upfront about it for the most part.
Yeah, I know on gay dating sites and hookup apps, it's almost commonplace to list your HIV status. Did you see a lot of like STI disclosure in other people's profiles?
No, not at all. I mean,
you're pioneering.
I would actually search on some of the sites that allowed you to do that. I would search for keywords, and wow, I mean, in the United States, amongst, you know, my demographic, in terms of partners, it was, I don't even remember, maybe 6 or 10 people in all of the United States who were on these dating sites who actually included it in their profiles. And actually, honestly, most of the keyword searches that turned up herpes as a joke. Right. There was always some joke included, that, and that was what actually turned up in my searches, which was horrible. Someone joking, you know, well, at least I don't have herpes, and, you know, this sort of joke. And it was horrible.
So I want to talk about both the stigma and this question of testing. So what's interesting in your case is, if you hadn't been persistent and stubborn, you may still not know that you're positive.
No, and I wouldn't.
So it's almost like by getting the information, you have been burdened in a way. And and the fact that the CDC, Planned Parenthood, doesn't test routinely or suggest testing for sexually active adults, as you said, it kind of creates this like don't ask, don't tell policy, which is part of the reason that this virus is so prevalent.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, imagine if we did that with HIV.
Exactly. No, and it's very interesting to then read the literature for the CDC and for Planned Parenthood and others. And it really is a don't ask, don't tell policy. And, you know, honestly, I understand that because as many physicians have explained to me, and that seems to be their position, is that if you don't have an outbreak, and so many people don't, the CDC actually says it's almost more of an emotional burden to know. And that seems a little tipsy-turvy and backwards to me, but hey, I do get it. I do get it because it is a fairly benign virus. This is not, you know, this is not life-threatening in almost any circumstance. And so I also understand that point of view. It's a virus.
But what's so interesting about it is people are so afraid of it, right? So it's actually is quite benign. It's so livable. And yet the stigma around it is kind of like parallels it with something like HIV. And
absolutely.
It's like, if we could just talk more honestly about it, it would be almost like talking about, you know, I've got a cold, or like there are these other things that we talk honestly about because they're not burdened with sexual shame.
Oral herpes, no one really, I mean, so many people have it. No one thinks twice about it for the most part.
Right.
So, and the infection rate's much higher. So it's just really a matter of placement.
So would you say that living with like the stigma and the social reaction has been worse than any physical impact?
I have never had an outbreak, again, knowingly. And so I've never had to kind of live with that, and I know, I know from friends who had it. I know from the literature. I mean, I know it can be incredibly painful and inconvenient and not any fun to live with physically, but I've never had that. I've only had kind of the stigma part, and part of that stuff I've internalized myself and I've made it important. Some people choose to really downplay it, and I guess I go the other direction.
Yeah. So why is this important to you, especially not having outbreaks? Like, why have you chosen to front and center it in your dating life and even reach out to us to want to talk about it? Like, what does it mean to you?
I just find there's so many ironies. There's so much kind of silence and hypocrisy in some ways. And there just needs to be more information. And then we can all calm down a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
Because people run scared. It's a great way to silence the conversation in a room would be to scream herpes.
Right.
It would go completely silent. So there's so much fear. There's so much fear. And I don't know. I tend to want to combat that with being even more vocal and more putting myself out even more.
Which I think is so brave and so important. And when we talk about on the show, like, being sex positive and being a sexual activist and changing sex culture, this is one of the frontiers, because as we can talk about sexual orientation more clearly, but the conversation around sexually transmitted infections is often still laden with this sex negative culture of like, it means you're cheap, or it means you're dirty, or I don't care about yourself. Like, it has
Absolutely.
All of these layers of social meaning that are really a part of sex negative culture in our past, where, you know, if a woman came pregnant, she would be like disposable, and to get an infection and you weren't waiting for marriage. Like, it's not reflective of the hookup culture we have now, where people have multiple sexual partners and more likely than not you will have an infection over the span of your sexual lifetime.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do find that stigma attached to people who have it interesting. I mean, when you read stories about people contracting, it's so often when you read their stories about them realizing or coming to terms with it, there's so much blame. There's so much blame on previous partners, even often without even knowing necessarily that person is who transmitted it to them.
And I've noticed, like, since I was diagnosed diabetic, I've started noticing so many diabetes jokes that I kind of never really registered before. And once you and I started in dialogue, I started noticing the herpes jokes. And,
absolutely.
Like, how does it feel if you're just browsing Facebook and you get, you know, it's easier to catch than herpes kind of stupid meme pop up?
It depends on the day, honestly. Uh-huh. And it also just depends on, I think, reading someone's intentions. I mean, I think that sometimes it's really is much more mean-spirited than others. Mm. But even the casual stuff is difficult because I am aware of the statistics. So when I look out at the world, similar to you maybe in diabetes, I mean, I look at the world very differently. I look at the world kind of in terms of statistics.
Yeah.
I'm in the room with 10 people and someone makes a joke. Well, many of us in that room have it, but very few of us know it. And I'm one of those.
Right.
But yeah.
And so you know you're not alone, and yet you're somewhat alone in talking about it.
That's exactly the irony. I feel so alone, but I'm just so not in reality. That's difficult. That kind of sense of isolation, despite the statistics. Yeah.
So I do feel like we need to kind of develop more of a calling out culture around this, just like we do with racism and sexism and homophobia. Like, all of us, no matter what our status, known or not, need to start kind of calling people out when they make these jokes and making it not okay to mock or degrade people with specific infections. Would you like to see more of that happening? Like, how can people be allies to you?
Yeah, I guess I would like to see that. I don't have any great expectations for that's concerned. But yeah.
Dream big, Ramsey.
Yeah. Okay, dream big. All right. Here I am, dreaming big. Yes, I would like that. And I think that and if people really stop to think about it, and it's very interesting when you actually get in a conversation with someone, so often people actually do know people who have it or have heard stories and that are people around them. They do have these people in their lives who they have had it. And I think that I just would love for everyone to just be more conscious and conscientious about the stigma and how it feels, and to really realize it's so common, and there's nothing dirty, it's just fear. It's so much fear.
And I would imagine that, you know, if you know your status and you're not disclosing, that the anxiety that comes up around sex can be kind of debilitating.
I would, if you're not disclosing,
you know, it's like if you know you have it and you don't want your partner to know because you don't want to be judged, like that could be quite crippling.
I would imagine. For me, that hasn't really happened for the most part. But, you know, I am the first to say that it has not always been a matter of disclosure for me. I have started sexual relationships with people using a condom and not having that conversation a few times of the many times that has happened a couple times. I would say, in fact, my fiance,
congratulations.
Thank you. And I, our relationship has so many aspects of this built into it. But the first time we had sex, we used a condom, and only after the first time I actually had to tell her after that first time. It was I had so much guilt, and maybe rightly so. I mean, I'm not perfect, but I outed myself after this first time, and it turns out that she had seen a dating site. She had me on a dating site, and she actually had that information in the back of her mind. She remembered me from a previous time when I had put it on my profile.
Wow.
And in this case, later, I had taken it off, but she remembered from the first time. And so I've gone both ways with it. I've had it on my profile, and I've taken it off my profile. And I've been incredibly upfront about it, and I've waited a little longer. I've been that person. I've done all of those different things.
Mm.
But I just I'm not the kind of person who could hide it for long. And I do agree that, that the weight of that on some people, including myself, is very immense. It's intense. It's very intense.
But, and then when you're disclosing and you care about someone and you have something to lose.
Yeah. I was incredibly, in this case, I will say, I was incredibly scared. I was incredibly scared of the disclosure. And I think it also brings up another interesting point to me, which is that this had happened, and she did have this prior knowledge of me, but she herself thought that this wasn't an issue because we had used a condom. But mm-hmm. there is that level of knowledge that, or the lack of it, that's perfectly evident. That she felt she was safe. So no matter what I had said previously, that at least in this case, we were safe. And with my knowledge, knowing what I know, I knew we weren't safe. We were safer, much safer. But so I had to come out with it. And I think that it also then, what she was very good about was also taking the responsibility for herself. And I think that comes back to the blame thing. I think that people don't take responsibility for themselves in this case. Uh-huh. And she did. She really did, because we hadn't had the conversation about STIs at that point. We hadn't, and we weren't, and we could have, we should have. But she realized that that was partly her responsibility, was to ask those questions, and she didn't ask the questions. And at least for the first time, I didn't tell. So, and here we are.
Yeah, and you're right. Like, there doesn't have to be the burden of disclosure on people who have known infections. It's really the burden of taking known risks for all of us when we're moshing our bodies together.
Absolutely, all of us. And it is everyone's responsibility. And certainly I have, I have the responsibility of disclosure, but yeah, it's two people, and you have to ask questions, and this should be front and center in all of these cases, but it gets pushed to the back burner and it gets suppressed. And yeah.
Yeah, and it's just true that the model of having the safe sex conversation before any sexual contact, like, that's ideal, but it usually doesn't happen. And sometimes it is after a few times of having sex that you feel safe enough or invested enough to have that conversation. And
absolutely, it really does vary quite a bit. And
so what advice would you give people who are either dating or in long-term relationships? Like, are you glad you got tested and no?
That's tough. Am I glad I got tested and no? Again, depends on the day you ask me. But of course, overall, as I said in my letter, this is kind of my soapbox.
Yeah.
So, I have no regrets, honestly. I've had some wonderful people in my life, and I have this amazing woman in my life now. And looking back, absolutely no regrets. Absolutely none. I guess I just wish. It's that dream again. I just wish this was much more part of the conversation. And I think if that were the case, the stigma would melt away with it to some extent. So.
Yeah. And I think what's beautiful about it is whether or not you need to know your herpes status, if you're not having outbreaks, besides that point, you took responsibility for your sexual health and took that agency. And that has probably made you have a better sex life, just because you're in control and you are choosing knowledge and you're choosing to know. And, you know, when we avoid going to the doctor, when we avoid getting tested, part of that is just being in that shame and fear and allowing that to dictate our actions. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, for everyone listening, like, going to your doctor and having an honest conversation. Like, we get so many emails that, you know, we can't give medical advice. And that's part of the reason we haven't tackled infections so much, because we are not licensed doctors, so we can't give advice. And I get these emails that are like, you know, really intense medical situations. And I write back to the person, like, I'm not the right person to be asking these questions to. You need to go to a doctor. And they're like, no, I could never talk to about sex to my doctor. And it's these professionals are there to help us and guide us and give us resources. And we need to break the silence in the doctor's office, on Facebook, with each other. And yeah, kind of allow these conversations to be something that's easier to talk about and puts less burden on the few of us and welcomes everyone into the conversation. Does that make sense?
It does, absolutely. And I think it's interesting that from my experience in having the conversation with multiple doctors over the years is just kind of experiencing the various attitudes that they have about it, which again, as doctors, as people dealing with, you know, public health, this is in many ways a very low priority for them because it is a relatively benign situation. And so I found it most difficult that in some ways because I was hyperventilating or you know, I was very concerned and I had a lot of questions. And generally speaking, they had a fairly laid back attitude about it, which sometimes drove me kind of crazy.
Right.
Because this was a serious issue in my life, but for them, as a medical issue, as a medical condition, their level of concern was, you know, a much different level than mine.
Yeah. Yeah. And I get these emails sometimes like people have a chronic sore throat and the doctor can't figure it out. And then it turns out they have gonorrhea of the throat. Mm-hmm. And once they disclose to their doctor, well, I have oral sex with a lot of partners, then they test for the right thing. And so it's part of it is just being willing to own your sex life in order to get the right diagnosis.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I have no regrets about really kind of calling them out on it and saying, no, I really want to get tested and really knowing what I wanted despite, you know, their own doubts about, and again, rightly so, from their perspective. But, and I do think that there is a comfort in numbers sort of thing. And I think that I do wish there was a magical test and everyone would know and
yeah,
we'd all feel more comfortable.
Yes. So in the closing to your email, you write, for myself, there's no end to the irony that many of those same people that mock, joke, or are silent out of fear are themselves silent carriers of the same virus that has had such a profound effect on my life.
Mm.
So thank you for speaking up. And I hope that this conversation will prompt other people to talk about it more openly and kindly and with a more groundedness in the real risks of sex. Is there anything else you want people to know?
No, I think that covers it quite well. Again, I think it's in, I think we really all need to be more open. We need to be open, more open about the topic of sex in general, as your podcast certainly advocates, and be in conversation about this. And this to me is very important that this be included in the conversation, and that this is not a conversation killer, that this is the beginning of a conversation. And that's incredibly important to me.
I love it. And I was so grateful that you reached out and kind of said, you know, I love the podcast, but you're missing this really big piece.
It's true. And it's not just you. It's everybody. And only the prevention, that in that mentality, it's kind of a bunker mentality, like, don't get this. But now that you do, my question becomes, okay, well, then how do we as a community and as people who have it live with it?
Yeah.
And there are so many of your listeners that are in this situation. There really are, statistically.
Yeah.
Our mental health is important in this case, and we need to talk about it.
Well, thank you for leading the charge. Normally, I end these interviews by saying, how can people find you online? But we're not going to send floods of people to you. So I'm going to ask, when are you getting married?
I'm getting married in June.
Fabulous.
Soon. Yep.
Fabulous. Yep.
Very happy.
Well, we hope you have a fabulous wedding and that that is the start of a beautiful lifetime together with lots of great sex. And if we can help you out in any way in that regard, you know where to find us.
We're regular listeners, both of us.
And any other listener that relates to the show or has another topic that they think we've been too silent on, you can get in touch with us at pleasuremechanics.com. We love hearing from you. Ramsey, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much.